stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there in these days? He asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body, where they came back and told us they had indeed seen a vision of angels who had said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the woman had said, but they did not see him. Then Jesus said to them, 'Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all of that the prophets had declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?' Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, 'Stay with us, because it is almost evening and day is now nearly over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was on the table with them, he took bread, blessed, and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?' That same hour they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, 'The Lord has risen indeed, and he has appeared to Simon.' Then they told what had happened on the road and how he had been made known to them in breaking of the bread."
Thanks, Georgina. The story of the Emmaus Road is a familiar one. Two people, discouraged by recent confusing and troubling events, have decided to give up and head home. They are disciples of Jesus, but not two of the big 12, just two of the many people who had thought Jesus was going to change the world, and now he was dead. Time to go home. This story is set dab in the middle of the Easter story. If you only read this part of the story, you will have more questions than answers right from the beginning. It says, on the same day. What day? It says, two people. Who are these people? A village called Emmaus. Well, where's that? Why are they sad? And why are they talking about all the things that have happened? What are those things? We have to find these answers by looking at the context of the story, the events of the week before. The first question that came to my mind was, who is the second person on the road? Only one person on the road to Emmaus is named, a man named Cleopas. Have you heard this story before? How many of you have heard the story of the road to Emmaus? Okay, great. Have you ever thought about who the other person was? Have you ever imagined who this other person might have been? Did you ever consider that it might have been a woman? Exactly. When I looked back at the previous verses, women are the ones who are doing everything. They're mentioned many, many times. And one of the women is a woman named Mary, wife of Clopas, pretty close to Cleopas. It's entirely possible that these two were a married couple, Cleopas and Mary. That really lit up the story for me. Mary might have even been one of the women at the tomb who ran to tell the disciples what they had found and who was not believed. Now think about the things she might have been talking to her husband about as they walked on the road. In any case, they were heading to Emmaus, heading home. Maybe Emmaus was their home, maybe it was just a stop along the way. It was 7 miles from Jerusalem. But Jesus had other ideas for them. He intercepted them on the road, and they didn't recognize him. Why do you think that was? Back in verse 25, Jesus said to them, "Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart." How are we foolish and slow of heart? One reason might be that they had a preconceived notion of what Jesus should look like and act like. They and many of the disciples had been looking for a particular kind of Messiah, one mighty in word and deed, as Jesus was, but also mighty in power, the power to restore Israel to her former glory. They imagined they might have their own king again, like David, who ruled through military might. They did not imagine a Messiah who would quietly submit to a humiliating death on a cross, who would refuse to fight back, refuse to call down 12,000 angels to rescue him, who would refuse even to speak in his own defense. They did not imagine a Messiah who would seemingly abandon them just when things were starting to look promising. We often miss an encounter with Jesus because he is not showing up in the way we were expecting. Where is Jesus in the midst of our sorrow and suffering, our confusion and anger? Where is the healer we read about? Where is the teacher we are searching for? We want Jesus to be reliable. We want him to be predictable. In short, we want him to do what we want. In Brian McLaren's book, Faith After Doubt, this kind of faith is called the stage of simplicity. Brian talks about four stages of faith: simplicity, complexity, perplexity, and harmony. In the stage of simplicity, God is the supreme being, almighty protector, warrior, lawgiver, patron, patriarch. He shows up as expected. But life eventually gets complicated. We grow up a bit. We become more independent. We enter the age of complexity. God doesn't show up the same way that God did when we were kids. Jesus becomes an encourager and a guide, a sort of coach who can help us prosper and succeed. We know that things don't turn out perfectly all the time, but we trust that if we work hard, live good lives, and trust God, things will eventually work out. But sometimes they don't work out. We know that. Then doubt enters the picture. Questions arise. Where is Jesus with all the answers? We enter the stage of perplexity. Nothing is certain anymore. God seems distant and mysterious. Our close relationship with God fades or disappears altogether. We stop recognizing Jesus in our lives at any stage where he stops showing up according to our preconceived ideas. Another reason they didn't recognize Jesus was that he wasn't arriving on their schedule. We can hardly blame the two people on the road to Emmaus for being impatient. They had just celebrated Passover, the single most important and defining event in their nation's history, the delivery from slavery in Egypt. For over 1,000 years, they had been celebrating this delivery. For about 400 years, they were a people with their own kings, their own rules, but for the last 600 years, they had been under the rule of a series of foreign powers. First the Assyrians, then the Babylonians, then the Greeks, and now the Romans. Surely now would be a good time for the Messiah to show up and deliver them again. But instead, just one day after their joyful celebration of the Passover, he was dead, along with all their hopes and dreams. The two people told Jesus, "Yes, and besides all this, it's now the third day since these things took place." They had waited what they considered a decent amount of time and decided it was over. Jesus was dead and not coming back to deliver them. Does Jesus always work to your schedule? When he doesn't, what is your reaction? Do you continue to wait? Do you give up? Do you look for another solution, another savior? Waiting can be terrible. Time drags on and hope fades. Jesus is nowhere to be seen, like really, nowhere to be found. Not in Bible reading, not in prayer, not in long walks in nature. All your usual solutions aren't working. So do you give Jesus the silent treatment? Start yelling at the heavens. We, like the two on the road, have waited for Jesus to answer our prayers. It's hard to recognize Jesus in the waiting. Another reason they didn't recognize Jesus was that they didn't really believe he was alive. The news about his resurrection had come from an unreliable source. You see, the first witnesses to the resurrection were women. We heard that story last week. But women were often not believed. They were considered unreliable witnesses. In spite of the fact that they were part of the group of faithful followers for several years, in spite of the fact that they had witnessed the crucifixion, they had followed Joseph of Arimathea to the tomb and knew exactly where Jesus was buried, in spite of the fact that they and they alone had prepared for his embalming and had come to that same tomb on Sunday morning to honor him, they were not believed. As the travelers tell the stranger, "Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive." The disciples, back in last week's story, said, "These words seemed to them an idle tale, and we did not believe them." Women were unreliable witnesses. Who do you look for to bring you reliable news? Is it your minister, or a respected elder, or a teacher, an experienced news broadcaster, someone from your own cultural group, your own social group, your own gender? What if it came from another Christian denomination? What if the truth came from another faith tradition altogether? What if it came from a child? Would you listen? If we can keep our hearts open to hearing from whatever source God uses, we are much more likely to recognize Jesus when he shows up. Be prepared. Be open to being surprised by God. The last reason I think they didn't recognize Jesus was they were looking for Jesus in the extraordinary. After all, they had seen Jesus perform many miracles. They couldn't imagine he would show up as an ordinary man. So the man, who turned out to be Jesus, opened up their own familiar Hebrew scriptures to them, showing them in a new way what the prophets had said, that the Messiah must suffer and die before being raised to glory. He reminds them, no doubt, of his own words, "The last shall be first. You must be servant of all. This is my body given for you." Then he performs the very ordinary act of breaking bread, and their eyes are opened. And he disappears. There was no more need for Jesus' miraculous presence. Their hearts were telling them the truth now. Their hearts were burning within them. They ran back to Jerusalem with the news. Jesus was indeed alive. When we look for Jesus in the ordinary, he will reveal himself to us. In McLaren's book, the fourth stage of faith is called harmony. Harmony is where we begin to see God as a loving presence, as creative wisdom, being known through experience and metaphor. So we see him in his loving presence. Our hearts burn too, and we know he is there, even though we can't see him. We see Jesus in creative wisdom. We are no longer stuck in the old story we have been believing and clinging to for so long. We can trust that Jesus, through the presence of the Holy Spirit, will reveal himself in new ways, creative ways. We can see Jesus in our experiences. we start to recognize Jesus in our everyday encounters, our everyday events, both good and bad. It might be a stranger's kindness, or it might be a flat tire, might be a lovingly prepared meal, or a canceled trip. All have the potential to reveal Jesus to us. We see him in metaphor, in picture and story form, in nature, in the sacrament of communion, in poetry and song. The ordinary is everywhere. So is Jesus, if we have a heart that is willing and eyes that are open. If you want to recognize Jesus when he shows up, remember to set aside any preconceived notions about how he will show up. Remember that his timing is not your timing, hard as that may be. Look for him in unexpected places and people. Be open to the holiness of ordinary things. And don't worry if you realize that you too have been foolish and slow of heart. Jesus will search you out on whatever road you're on and tenderly, firmly, lovingly reveal himself to you. He walks at our pace. He teaches at our level until eventually our eyes are opened. Let's just take a few moments to think about those things.